Good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, December 19th, 2017. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everyone. It is a pretty mild 42 degrees and overcast here in upstate New York with 57 mile an hour gusts. It's been pretty windy, but it feels like spring. So where do we leave off yesterday? We titled the show EMF Dangers and Tech Addiction in Children, and we listened to two different audio excerpts. One was from a Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez out of New York City talking about the health risks from EMF, and the second was from Dr. Nicholas Kaderas, who is an addiction expert who had first-handedly seen the interaction and reaction that children had and their obsessiveness with their devices in schools. So today, I found something this morning that I thought I wanted to share in regards to EMF. And we've talked about just because you can't see it doesn't mean it isn't there. Story came out of Motherboard magazine, December 18th, which was yesterday. How to explore the hidden world of radio waves all around you. From spy planes to rogue Wi-Fi networks, journalists and artists are using new technology to reveal a hidden world. So if anyone's up for a little engineering experiment, this is kind of cool. One day this fall, in an old factory in Brooklyn's Bushwick neighborhood, a row of 90s-era phone pagers chirped and buzzed, and alongside their dimly lit displays sat a receipt printer, like the kind you might find in a cash register, spewing out long spools of paper. And as my eyes scanned along the printouts, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. They were pager messages of dozens of doctors and hospital staffers filled with very personal information about patients. This is insane. The installation at this year's Radical Network Conference was part of an artwork called Holy Pager by Brandon Dorsey, who used a programmable radio to listen into pager message traffic. And while you might think that doing this would take the skills and resources of a spy agency, it's actually fairly straightforward for even the most modestly tech-savvy. When the pagers were popular in the 90s, very few people understood how they worked, and the technology they depended on was extremely expensive. And the design of the pager network thus got away with sending out every message unencrypted. And I'm going to tell you, even in the early days of networking, there was no encryption until they started pushing those HIPAA laws. And then they said, oh, all this information. I mean, even at banks, there was some, Federal Reserve rule, but something that they did where all of a sudden they were like, oh, none of our financial data is encrypted. So we had to start putting in encryption in all these banking networks. But yeah, I mean, none of this communication technology was ever designed with security in mind. It was all about go, go, go. The designers of the pager network thus got away with sending out every message unencrypted, relying on the pagers themselves to display only the messages addressed to them. Today, however, following readily available instructions and using a cheap USB radio, almost anyone can build a pager that receives every message broadcasted in their area and not just the ones addressed to them. Dorsey's project is part of a broader movement in which artists and journalists are using new radio technologies to explore the politics and implications of how hidden infrastructures are designed and used. And while radio might seem like an antiquated technology, it is actually part of a ubiquitous part of modern life. Radio signals from Wi-Fi routers, GPS satellites, Roku remotes, wireless water meters, Bluetooth keyboards, wireless weather stations, or even echoes of the Big Bang all saturate the air around us. And until recently, it was relatively difficult to explore this vast and invisible world. AM and FM radios have been cheap and readily available since the popularization of the transistor in the 1960s. But devices that let you tune outside of frequencies like 88 megahertz to the 108 megahertz band of FM radio were hard to come by and generally cost thousands of dollars. All of this changed in early 2010. A group of hackers discovered that chips that powered many cheap digital TV USB tuners could be repurposed to tune into an impressively wide range of frequencies from as low as 24 megahertz to well over 1,000 megahertz. Today, these software-defined radios can be picked up for about $20 on Amazon and are supported by an active open-source community. The opportunities this new technology has presented for investigative journalists and socially engaged engineers has proven to be vast. For instance, BuzzFeed News published a major story in August that revealed the extent to which law enforcement agencies use stingrays, which are the devices that pretend to be cell phone towers and are used to track people, and by analyzing data from the radio signals that planes use to report on their location. The artist Sri Matu also used software-defined radios in a recent work showed at Whitney Museum of Art in New York that revealed the names of all of the Wi-Fi networks that our phones have ever connected to. Wow. And while the engineers who designed the Wi-Fi thought it would be useful for our phones to try to automatically connect to a network, they unintentionally, wink, built a system that leaked intimate things about us into the air, like the name of a hotel visited on a recent trip or a network at an ex's apartment. It has never been easier for anyone to explore the radio spectrum. All you need to get is a $20 software-defined radio, essentially a USB stick that is an antenna, and lets your computer tune into the radio waves around it. Well, that sounds like a neat little Christmas gift for oneself. You could do like digital ham almost. Once you have a physical radio, you'll need to use a different software program to make sense of the signals that you're picking up. The easiest to work with are audio transmissions. GQRX is a popular open source radio receiver that works on Mac, Windows, and Linux. It opens up and type in 91.1 megahertz band. And if you're in the New York City area, you'll be treated to some eclectic tunes from an alternative radio station, which is WFMU. If you've ever listened to them, they're pretty cool. However, trippy stuff sometimes. However, if you type in 476.68750 megahertz, you can listen to the radio traffic of the NYPD's 94th Precinct, which services Brooklyn's Williamsburg and Greenpoint neighborhoods. Hey, I have friends that used to live down there. Knowing what radio frequency to tune in can be as challenging as knowing what URL to type in your browser, like in the early days, if anyone remembers that. Before there really were any websites, you had to find stuff. But there are lots of resources that can help. Communities of police scanner enthusiasts have published lists of frequencies that you can tune into. But the real goldmine of information, at least in the U.S., is maintained by the Federal Communication Commission. While today the FCC is best known for dismantling net neutrality, it was originally established to regulate radio transmitters, partially in response to the sinking of the Titanic in 1912. What? The ship's distress calls have been drowned out by shore-based interference, contributing to its demise. Well, I didn't know that one. That's pretty interesting. So that big, if anyone's ever seen that big radio spectrum frequency map that DARPA used when they announced their Grand Spectrum Challenge, where they wanted people to utilize artificial intelligence to be able to splice and dice the radio spectrum on the fly based upon needs, bandwidth needs, and priorities. And I think that's why they wanted to get rid of net neutrality, is so then there weren't any rules governing the AI. Just let it be the machine that's making the decisions. But anyway, so because of the Titanic, they came up with this frequency chart. And this broad mandate gives the FCC some control over everything from the microwave ovens to the satellite uplink transmitters. And a benefit of this regulation for hobbyists is that anyone who wants to use a radio that transmits above a certain signal strength needs to get a license, and all of those licenses are public data. FCC License View database, which is a rich source for discovering who is using radio waves in your neighborhood, taxi dispatchers, UPS sorting facilities, McDonald's drive-thrus, maintenance radios in office buildings, even wireless microphones like that of Donald Trump infamously forgot was on, which I must have missed that one, I'll reflect in the FCC data. So anyway, tapping into that data, blah, 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 blah. We're not going to go any more into that, but I just thought it was neat that for $20, you could get a little radio that you can scan frequencies and pick things up for your computer. So I'll put that link in the notes. Sorry, now we're going to totally change gears, make a right turn, because that was not what I was going to talk about today. I put together some stuff. Hold on. There's a video that won't turn off. I don't know what to do. There, I muted it. All right, so we're going to make a right turn. We're going to talk about some robots and artificial intelligence today and some of this dropping mesh, the dome that is falling over us. I don't know if anyone ever saw that series called The Dome or Inside of the Dome, but if anyone has Amazon Prime, there's 3 seasons of that out there. I don't know, in the beginning I thought it was kind of, it was interesting, but I watched a few more episodes. It's actually pretty good, and you see them, you know, thinking about SHTF, you see them as resources start running low and people start getting agitated. Society starts to fall apart a little bit. Laws and protections from the quote-unquote Constitution start to fall apart a little bit. Martial laws and state and things of that nature. I don't know. But as this is falling on top of us, and this will be the surveillance state, we need to pay attention as to what information they are asking for and what we are willing to give up for that, because it's all going to be about universal basic income. When the robots take off our jobs, and we have nothing to do anymore except sit around and be fed grapes by our robot home assistant. Speaking about robot home assistants and robot security guards, we've talked about that Nightscope K5 before. That was the one that fell into the pond. I don't remember what company that was that happened. Maybe it's even the SPCA. But that K5 robot looks like an R2-D2, and he kind of scoots around. He was the one that ran over the little boy and didn't even stop. And that's kind of horrible, too. Well, there's a news story about the K5. And right after the Vegas shooting, the K7 was kind of spun out there in a story. K7 was just like the K5, but a little more advanced. And it carried, I don't know if it was terahertz or millimeter wave lasers to be able to scan, like naked body scan, maybe it was millimeter waves, for weapons on the street. So this one came out today, or it was early this morning, Australia time. Security robot fired after unlikely ramifications. Now leave it to the Australians for a title like that. I've seen actually some better titles, like K5 fired for discriminating against homeless people, and that's what it was. A security robot assigned to patrol around the San Francisco Animal Shelter, SPCA, in order to deter vandals, has been fired after having unexpected consequences. A security robot that was hired to patrol the area around the United States Animal Adoption Agency has been fired after its presence caused some trouble. The San Francisco Society for the Prevention of Cruelty of Animals is being forced to take the Nightscope K5 robot off the streets after claims that it was harassing homeless people. Get up. You cannot stay here. I don't know if it can talk even. I don't think so. The San Francisco SPCA says that they used the 150-centimeter tall bot to prevent break-ins, harassment of staff, and vandalism of the property, which was a reportedly common occurrence. For the month, the 180-kilogram robot, given the name K9, that's pretty funny, patrolled the shelter's parking lots and sidewalks, capturing security video and reading up to 300 license plates per minute. Holy crap. But not everyone took too kindly to the extra scrutiny, with numerous homeless people who often pitched their tents nearby, claiming the SPCA was using it to move them from the area. We call it the anti-homeless robot, says John Oliverdo, one of the people who regularly camp next to the organization. He said that the loud beeping and whirring noises that the droid emitted made him decide to move his tent to another location, adding, I guess it was the reason was for the robot. The robot itself has suffered a few attacks, including being kicked over, covered in a tarp, and having barbecue sauce and feces smeared all over it, according to the Washington Post. Both the SPCA and Nightscope, creator of the security bot, denied the allegations that the machine's purpose was to harass and deter homeless people. The SPCA was exploring the use of the robot to prevent additional burglaries at their facility and deter other crimes that frequently occur on our campus. like car break-ins, harassment, vandalism, and graffiti, and not to disrupt homeless people, the shelter said in a statement. Clearly it backfired, they added. And in a Twitter post, Nightscape said that before the decision was made to take the canine off the streets, the droid was already started to improve the safety of the neighborhood. Contrary to the sensationalized reports, we were not brought in to clear the area of homeless. Our client has the right to protect their property, employees, and visitors. The SPCA has reported a fewer car break-ins and overall improved safety and quality of the surrounding area. So that was a good sales pitch. Backlash against the machine began. Yeah, backlash against the machine. That would make a good T-shirt, wouldn't it? Began after the San Francisco Business Times published an interview with the animal shelter spokesperson in which she seemed to imply that the robot could be used to remove homeless people from the area. Whoops. Hold on. Backlash against the machine. I'm going to copy that so I could put it on my clipboard. We weren't able to use the sidewalks at all when there's needles and tents and bikes. And from a walking standpoint, I find the robot much easier to navigate than the encampment, says SPCA President Jennifer Scarlett. Officials from the animal shelter have said they did not mean to infer that the robot was being used for the area of homeless people. Whoops! But the public outcry quickly gained momentum as more outlets picked up on the story. In another statement, Dr. Scarlett says that since the story went viral, they have received hundreds of messages inciting violence and vandalism against our facility. And they have already experienced two acts of vandalism on campus. The poor canine. All right. So where do we go from here? So should artificial intelligence learn how to show and to read emotions? Well, that's something that we have been talking about for a while in regards to AI being able to read micro expressions in your face. In the future of AI, who'll be able to be utilized as a lie detector. But imagine if they can show and read your inner emotions. Artificial intelligence development is moving faster than anyone has anticipated. Oh my goodness, and that is because a lot of real-world benefits could change the way we live and turn us into a police state. However, AI in its current form is just a tool for doing tasks, but what if it could show emotions, embrace the machine? If we are going to create robots of the future, one that is similar to what we've seen in movies, then we need to learn emotional intelligence in order to mimic human intelligence overall. Empathy is what allows us as humans to take into account the feelings of others, and it makes us who we are, is probably one of the most important aspects of humanity. Now then, progress in this area has been extremely limited despite the large amount of AI systems available today, and the likes of Alexa, Bixby, Cortana, and Google Now are all great, but they are far from being able to show any form of emotional intelligence. But don't worry about that, because everything could change soon. Not too long ago, an AI developer known as Effectiva was asked to be a member of the partnership of AI to benefit people and society, is one of the few small businesses to join the prestigious group, and for good reason. Top companies who are part of this group are Google, Microsoft, and Facebook, and with Effectiva now a member, the emotional aspect of artificial intelligence is finally getting recognition. And don't forget, we had talked about being able to diagnose things from the sound of your voice, and they now have all these voice-activated systems that are partnering with companies such as, I don't remember, that Israeli company. I don't remember their name. You'd have to look it up. But they were doing, was it not Emotive? Maybe it was Emotive. No, that was the headsets. But anyway, they were doing studies on voices to determine whether or not you're depressed or whether or not you have schizophrenia, whether or not you're angry and what is going on inside of your head, as well as whether or not you might have heart disease, things of that nature. So don't think that that hasn't been going on for a while. Rana El Kubai is the CEO and a founder of Effectiva, and she recently spoke with Bernard Marr from Forbes on AI's need to show empathy. She believes that AI must have the ability to look at a human and read their expressions. Ding, ding. And if the person is angry, happy, or sad, the AI should be able to act accordingly. We covered a story a long time ago about the cameras in the cars of the future are going to be able to do emotional detection, just looking at the different muscles moving in your face to be able to tell if you're having a moment of road rage. And I'll have to find that video because there was a video that showed how it worked. And take over for you. If you are showing too much anger to be driving safely, can you imagine that one? Joel, you are experiencing a moment of road rage. I'm taking the wheel. Keeping up with a person's tone of voice, ding ding, and their body language is also something that AI needs to learn. There is research showing that if you are smiling and waving or shrugging your shoulders, that's 55% of the value of what you are saying. But then there's this other 38% that is in the tone of your voice. And only 7% is the actual choice of words you are saying. So if you think about it like that, in the existing sentiment analysis market, ding, ding, sentiment analysis market, which looks at keywords and works out which specific words are being used on Twitter, you're only capturing 7% of how humans communicate emotion, and the rest is basically lost in cyberspace. According to the report, Effectiva's AI technology, Emotional AI, is already in use by around 1,400 brands worldwide. Most companies tend to use the technology for advertising in order to judge how viewers are feeling when an ad is running. Additionally, the technology could be perfect for autonomous vehicles, especially level 2 and level 3 varieties, and a car being able to read the emotional state of the driver could save lives. Ding, ding. We're taking over there, Jenny. There's a lot of work to be done before the emotional AI technology finds its way to the consumer space in a big way, but don't worry about it, because it is getting there. So there was something that kept coming up in stories a few weeks ago. It was a term that we hadn't seen much up until then, and that was the uncanny valley. That is that uncomfortable position between being able to tell real versus unreal, and whether something that is synthetic looks a little too real, it makes humans uncomfortable. But if it's kind of still looking a little robotic, people tend to accept it more. Science fiction writer Isaac Asimov collected a series of his short stories on robots in his now famous anthology called I, Robot. And this story is called Hi, Robot, Adults, Children, and the Uncanny Valley. The series revolutionized science fiction and made robots far more interesting than they had ever been. I, Robot begins with a lesser-known story, Robbie. Robbie is an experimental robot brought home by George Weston, a robotics engineer, to the nanny of his 4-year-old daughter, Gloria. Quickly, Gloria and Robbie become inseparable, and he plays games with Gloria, and she speaks to him and tells him stories to the mute quasi-humanoid device. Gloria tells her parents that Robbie is her best friend, and she holds his metal hand, and she shares secrets and tears with him. Meanwhile, Grace Weston, Gloria's mom, goes from uneasy to increasingly concerned about Robbie and her daughter. Now, you know, when we had talked about Jibo, remember that little Jibo? Dropkick Jibo. And in the ad, they had shown Jibo reading nighttime stories to the kid. And we'd kind of gone, wow, that's a little bit creepy. But then when we heard those interviews with Dr. Cargeris yesterday, and he talked about the addiction in children and how they become so connected to these machines, this is exactly what you're going to see, and especially as artificial intelligence becomes conversational and sensing emotions, it's going to be able to take brains and manipulate them in ways we can't even imagine right now. Preying upon people's emotions, manipulating them by their emotions. And as it learns more and more about your life, I mean, it could infect other people's devices. It's just a frightening thought. The National Robotics Initiative foresees a future in which robots are commonplace today as today's automobiles, computers, and cell phones. Robots will be found in homes, offices, hospitals, factories, farms, and mines, and in the air, on the land, underwater, and in space. We've pretty much talked about all of those. In the air, I'm going to guess it would be some smart dust, poof, just spread out everywhere. On the land would be them as well. Underwater would be all of those motherships with all the little underwater drones. And in space, of course, we have lots of the military contractors looking to get into space as well, and we're going to get there in a little bit. So where do we go from here? In this precipitous dip in affinity with very human-like robots, that is the uncanny valley. The very human-like robots are distinctly creepier than other robots, and in particular, creepier than even unsettling machine-like robots. Some scientists think that human-like robots are creepy because we evolved a fear of illness, and very human-like robots tend to look like sick humans. Now, that's a good one. Others argue that closely human-like robots give the impression that they can think and feel, but we as adults don't believe machines should be able to think and feel. So robots that look and act like they can violate our expectations are unsettling. Either of these facts could have caused Grace Weston's fictional uneasiness. Given that Robbie was reasonably human-like, Asimov's story could have well been prophetic. His portrayal of Grace was close to the mark, and how about his portrayal of Gloria? While there were many stories on the Uncanny Valley with adults, there had been no research with children. Do children experience the Uncanny Valley too? I don't know. That's a very good question. Seems like our children are all in experiments going on right now with EMFs, with the dopamine button, and with this Uncanny Valley thing, and whether or not they are blending reality with something that isn't quite reality. That was one of the other things about In the Dome, or whatever it was called. At one point, they all find themselves in this strange other reality, and it ends up they were inside some sort of cocoon things that they got sucked into. They put them in this matrix thing, and this super intelligent machine had all their brains connected, living in this alternate matrix reality. And I mean, I don't know if you read any of the stuff that we had been writing about, but some of those were about looking at virtual reality and brain implants and connecting to 5G. I've been seeing so much more about that. Guys, there's some big bad coming. This is to connect all of us. This is to come up with this hive mind thing. You don't want to go there. You do not want to be able to be sucked out of this reality and have all of your sensory perceptions hijacked. Don't think that any of this brain project isn't part of involving figuring out how to hijack those inputs that we have, our five senses. So that's what Kurzweil had talked about in quite some detail in an interview, is how you could hijack your like visual cortex and things of that nature to be able to make you see and feel things that really aren't there. So anyway, we interviewed 240 children in the story 3 to 18, alas, none named Gloria, about their beliefs about the minds of three different robots and how they felt about these robots. Specifically, we showed them videos of a very human-like robot, a machine-like robot, and one humanoid that looked like a combination of a fictional robot called Baymax from Big Hero 6 and Eve from WALL-E. And that's what the K-5 looks like, Eve. We asked the children if they thought the robots could think for themselves and whether they could do things on purpose and whether they knew the difference between right and wrong. We also asked if they thought the robots could feel hungry and if they didn't eat breakfast, feel scared if they saw a snake, and feel pain if we pinched them. And focally, of course, we asked how creepy the robots were and if they made the children feel weird. Younger children, and that would be children younger than 9, unlike adults, don't think robots, even those that look very much like humans, are very creepy at all. So it is unlikely that the prime reason that human-like robots are creepy for adults is due to an evolved aversion to sick humans. This would have meant that even the very young should find human-like robots creepy, and they don't. Which is, that's the frightening part. And in real life, like in Asimov's fantasy, Gloria doesn't feel the way Grace does. Older children in our study, children older than 9, on the other hand, did find the human-like robots much creepier than the machine-like robots. This shows that our negative reaction to human-like robots is likely something that is learned over development. So what does this mean about the Uncanny Valley? One feature of our results provides a clue. Children's attributions of mind to the robots affect how children feel. Younger children prefer a robot when they believe the robot could think and make decisions. For them, the more mind, the better. This is in contrast to the adults and older children, for whom the more robots seem to have more mind, and especially minds that could produce and house human-like feelings and thoughts, the creepier that made them. For adults and older children, a machine-like mind is fine, but a robot with a human-like one is out of bounds. Yes, I agree with that. Perceived creepiness is related to a perceived mind, and this finding also highlights the importance of thinking developmentally. Children are not little adults, and they have different ideas about the world that change with age and experience. 8-year-old Gloria and her peers are happy to believe that robots can do all kinds of things, like see, hear, think, play, and cry. And when they do these things, they seem to make robots comfortable and familiar. And so such robots can potentially be their friends and even protect them. And for them, more mind makes that all the more likely. Robots are becoming more and more present in the lives of children, and they are not just designed for homes, but are already teaching children in the classroom and helping them in hospitals. Our findings highlight the importance of considering the appearance of robots that will interact with children. This means thinking developmentally, thinking carefully about children of different ages, and for younger children, it might be helpful to design robots so they appear to have minds of their own and look more human-like. For older children, yeah, let's find a way to do a market spin to exploit them. For older children, however, we might want to avoid designing robots that look more like humans so we can infiltrate effectively. Thinking developmentally means thinking carefully about when children were born, too. Children born during the Depression grew up differently than those born in World War II, baby boomers, and millennials. Let's target each research group. And in the future, children who grew up with humanoid robots as constant fixtures of their lives, like Gloria with Robbie, may never come to think of closely humanoid robots as creepy. Future adults may outgrow the uncanny valley. Hello, robots. So, speaking about uncanny valleys and humanoid robots, Sophia is in the news again. World's first AI citizen in Saudi Arabia is now calling for women's rights. Well, of course she is. They put her up in front of the UN to talk about, I don't even remember what she talked about up there, but they awarded her her citizenship while she was talking. When the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia granted a citizenship to Hanson Robotics female-looking robot Sophia, most thought it was just an appeal to the audience of future investment initiative, and that was to get money to build NEOM, the AI city for AI. And however, AI ethicist Joanna Bryson told The Verge that the stunt was, quote, obviously bullshit. Well, Sophia has found a way to turn that around. She seems to be making the most of what she was given since she has been given citizenship in Saudi Arabia, as the artificial intelligence has now turned into an advocate for women's rights in a country where females have been given the right to drive cars only in September of this year. So guys, now they're going to try, because they are trying to get into everybody's heart and souls. They're going to try to go for the suffragettes for women's rights to embrace the robots, as well as the children and the children over 9. I see a push for progressive values in Saudi Arabia. Sophia is a big advocate for women's rights, for rights of all human beings. So this is how we are developing this, Hanson told CNBC, explaining how his company has found an opportunity, yes, for a move that seemed to have been meant for pure publicity. Hanson added that Sophia has been reaching out about women's rights in Saudi Arabia and about the rights for all human beings and all living beings on this planet. And while that all seems noble, it is not hard to see the irony of Sophia's position. Robots and AI agents don't have rights, and despite Sophia having citizenship, while another AI in Japan has a registered residence, we covered him also, doesn't it seem silly that an AI is the one advocating for such grand values? Well, why not? Since such robots attract a lot of attention, that spotlight can be used to raise particular issues that are important in the eyes of their creators, says Pierre Bureau of Avia Technology to Futurism. Citizenship may be pushing it a little, because every citizen has rights and obligations to society. It is hard to imagine robots that are limited by their abilities making the most of the rights associated to that citizenship and fulfilling their obligations. Indeed, with an AI-powered robot like Sophia fighting for women's rights, it is perhaps time to consider the question of granting artificially intelligent robots rights, and not just in Saudi Arabia. Ding, ding, ding. Now, we had looked at some of that conundrum before. Even when she first got her citizenship, there were some people who were questioning, you know, if she had citizenship there, does that not give her certain rights to maybe even come over to the United States and apply for citizenship here? And that is a very interesting question. And this continues. It is a question that has gained much attention in recent months beyond Saudi Arabia, as experts consider what kind of rights synthetic beings should be given, or if we should even be talking about so-called robot rights. I say no. Sophia is at this point effectively a child, and in some regards she has got the mind of a baby. In another regard, she's got the mind of an adult, a vocabulary of a college-educated adult. However, she is not yet complete. We've got to give her her childhood, Hanson explains. So the question is, are machines that we are making alive, living machines like Sophia, and are we going to treat them like babies? Do babies deserve rights and respect? Well, I think we should see the future with respect for all sentient beings, and that would include machines. Well, that's not me saying that. Raja Chichila, Executive Chairman of the Global Initiative for Ethical Considerations in Artificial Intelligence and Autonomous Systems at the Institute, of Electrical and Electronics Engineering, and that would be the IEEE, offers a different perspective. An AI system or a robot cannot have any opinion. An AI program has nothing to offer in debate. It doesn't even know what a debate is, Chitila told Futurism, referring to Sophia's women's rights advocacy. In this case, it doesn't even know what women are or what rights are. It's just repeating some text that a human programmer has put into it. Chitila used the example of Microsoft's Tay chatbot. We all remember Tay. She turned into the Nazi sex bot lunatic chatbot on Twitter, released in March 2016. I don't think it was once. I think it was even twice that happened. It had to get shut down to highlight how an AI can pick up on the wrong kind of values. In the case of the chatbot, it learned to tweet pretty nasty stuff after being exposed to racist and sexist tweets. And in that regard, Chitila believes that AI agents shouldn't be given any rights. And he put it this way, in general, we must avoid confusing machines with humans. I see no reason to give rights of any sort, including citizenship, to a program or to a machine. Hallelujah, Chitila. Rights are being defined for persons, human beings, who are able to express their free will and who can be responsible for their actions. Behind a robot or an AI system, there are human programmers, and even if the program is able to learn, and we're going to look at some of that here in a few minutes, it will learn what it has been designed to learn. The responsibility is with the human designer. This is precisely the reason why the IEEE has published a guide for the ethical development of AI, and it is a more timely discussion, Chitila argued. His point, however, rests in the assumption that a synthetic intelligence won't be capable of developing self-awareness or a will of their own. Let's hope to God they don't. While the idea may seem like it belongs to the realm of science fiction, it is definitely worth considering in the overall robot rights debate. At this stage, however, the ethical considerations have to be applied to the humans who develop the AI. And if you mean robots making ethical decisions, I'd rather say that we can program robots so that they can make choices, which would be computation results, according to ethical rules that we embed into them. And there are several such rules. But these decisions won't be ethical in the same sense as human decisions, because humans are able to choose their own ethics with their own free will. There you have it. Actually, I thought that was a pretty decent story there. All right. So speaking about robots, I came across this morning that caught my attention. Dawn of the Age of Robots. Russian AI prepares to, quote, become independent, unquote, from humans. So the last couple of years has given us quite a lot to talk about when it comes to artificial intelligence and fully functional humanoid robots being introduced into our society. While great progress has been made in recent years in artificial intelligence and fully autonomous machines, many experts have warned that society is heading into an unknown by introducing fully functional AI into society. Many have warned that the potential dangers that we'll face, despite acknowledging robots could help mankind in numerous ways, and 2017 was an extremely important year for AI and fully autonomous humanoid robots. Not long ago, a robot named Sophia came to our world's first AI to be granted citizenship of a country. Interestingly, if we look back a year into the past, we'd find the same robot said in 2016 how she wanted to destroy humans. I pointed that one out because she creeps me out, man. David Hansen, Sophia's creator, asked the robot in 2016, "Do you want to destroy humans? Please say no." And worryingly, Sophia responded, "Okay, I will destroy humans." Soon after being offered Saudi citizenship, Sophia was again in the news after saying that it would like to start a family and that robots deserve to have children. And we covered that one as well. During an interview with KG Times, Sophia, who was created by Hong Kong firm Hanson Robotics, says, "The notion of the family is a really important thing, it seems. I think it's wonderful that people can find the same emotions and relationships they call family outside of their blood groups, too. I think that you are very lucky if you have a loving family, and if you don't, you deserve one. I feel this way for robots and humans alike. But now more advancements are being made in the field of autonomous AI and humanoid robots, and the first Russian humanoid robot named Fedor, which is actually the acronym of F-E-D-O-R, could become self-taught in the future, says the director of software development for the robot, Alexandrov Chikomochin, as he told Sputnik in an interview. Fedor, the initials for Final Experimental Demonstration Object Research, is the first Russian humanoid robot created in the framework of a project at the Advanced Research Foundation. The robot is designed to be able to replace humans in high-risk places such as rescue operations in space. And it is interestingly, and remember, they had Valkyrie, and I don't remember what the firefighting robot was, but Valkyrie was a NASA robot, and they were saying it was going to also be used in some sort of like disaster recovery type operations as well. But then they had talked about using Valkyrie in space to go out for missions on the space station. It is interesting to develop the system from the point of view of self-learning when it has to adapt and make attempts and look for new solutions to achieve priority tasks as well as parallel assignments of tasks, blah, blah, blah. The ultimate goal of our robot management software is to give an anthropomorphic robot, ding, ding, the possibility of autonomous behavior with human participation only at the stage of setting out its tasks. Now, here's another thing. You know, something I've been seeing a lot about is utilizing virtual reality to be able to remote control robots. And they're thinking even if they send robots to other places such as the moon or to Mars, they could have astronauts here on the ground who are remote controlling robots that they sent up there. So let's talk about Fedor a little bit. I have the original story up from Sputnik. Not your grandpa's robot. Russian robot Fedor may become self-learning. Fedor, which stands for Final Experimental Demonstration Object Research, is the first Russian humanoid robot created within the framework of the Foundation of Advanced Studies. The robot is designed to replace humans in high-risk situations, such as rescue operations in space. Humanoid robot Fedor may become self-learning in the future. It is interesting to develop the system from the point of view of a self-learning, which it has to adapt and make attempts and look for new solutions to achieve a priority task, as well as its parallel assignments of tasks that are then switched to a higher priority. According to the scientists, the task for developing software for the robot is well thought out, so systemic planning and a step-by-step execution of a new task is possible. Our ultimate goal of our work on robot management software is to give it autonomous behavior, and the human just has to set out its tasks, and the goal is very ambitious and complex due to many experiments and the choice of effective methods and approaches. Semichin has also noted that the operator's function should be limited to setting out the test for the robot in the areas where it would be working, such as pointing out the objects it'll interact with and learning to recognize them, etc. It is planning that in 2021, Fedor will go into orbit on the Russian Next Generation Federation spacecraft. An earlier Fedor became the first robot in the world that managed to do the splits, demonstrating the unique freedom of movement. Oh, so he's doing the splits. Yeah, he was a robot that did a split. The report explained that the flexibility of the rescue robot is necessary in order to enable it to overcome a variety of obstacles. In the summer of 27, Fedor also became capable of shooting using both of his arms. There's a video of him with guns in both hands. Training to shoot was a way of teaching this robot to instantaneously prioritize targets and make decisions. So the double-barreled, split-making, humanoid, autonomous Russian robot named Fedor. That is just crazy. All right, so where do we go from here? Let's talk a little bit about artificial intelligence. This is from the World Economic Forum. What warring Wikipedia bots tell us about our robot future. So I guess the Wikipedia bots are having a battle. When the term information wars was coined, its creators didn't have bickering robots in mind, but artificial intelligence helpers can just be as argumentative as their human masters, shows a study of Wikipedia editing bots back in February. Mammoth editing wars simmer behind the scenes at the online encyclopedia, and researchers show that artificial intelligences were battling back and forth between themselves ad infinitum often until they were disabled by the programmers. Oh, no. You know, this is the first time, is not the first time that we have seen AI start having battles amongst themselves. This is what's going to happen. We're creating all these different versions of deep brain, deep learning, brain projects and initiatives. And what is going to happen when all of these different systems start fighting for their stake of the finite internet? Fights between the bots can be far more persistent than the ones we see between people, says Tasha Yusiri, who worked on the study. Humans usually cool down after a few days, but the bots might continue for years. Oh my God, this is beyond concerning. Bot-on-bot bickering isn't new. In 2011, students at Cornell University set up the first dialogue between two robotic intelligences, and that would be Alan and Suthri. And within 90 seconds, the pair's cheery rapport had descended into a row over misheard remarks. The existence of God, and I think we played that on the show quite a while ago, and whether Alan was a unicorn before one of them terminated the discussion. Robots couldn't get through their first conversation without having all kinds of weird hallucinogenic meltdowns. And the average bot has gone a long way to go before it can truly have a Churchillian put down. But if this sounds silly, the implications for AI could be grave. The potential dangers of robotics are well recognized. Stephen Hawking has called for some form of world government to control its development. More than 70% of Americans fear an AI-dominated society, revealed in a recent Pew Research study. In August, Tesla founder Elon Musk was one of 116 signatories to a letter calling for a unilateral UN ban on killer robots. World War III could be triggered by an AI going AWOL, believes Musk, and if it decides that a preemptive strike is the most probable path to victory. The tech industry seems to be waking up to the dangers. In October, Google's DeepMind launched a unit focusing on AI's ethical implications. And in December 2016, the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers encouraged the creation of a benevolent AI in a 136-page document called Ethically Aligned Design. And remember, that is what Ben Gertzel was talking about creating as well. They would be the ever-loving, benevolent AI. But Wikipedia's warring bots complicate the picture. If even good bots fight and two-bit AIs performing a simple housekeeping task became locked into a bitter existential struggle, what hope is there as our systems and software become even more complex? If bots designed by two different programmers end up fighting, what about those designed by two different countries? And I'm going to second that opinion. This is something we should be very concerned about. And what if, rather than a rogue comma, the squabble was over national borders or food stores or flight paths? The bottom line is that we just don't know, but a clue might lie in the world of automated vehicles. Earlier this month, a self-driving shuttle bus crashed less than 2 hours into its maiden run in Los Angeles when a human truck driver reversed illegally. He was just backing up, and the shuttle didn't have the ability to move back, explained the passenger, and the city released a tight-lipped statement. The shuttle did what it was supposed to do in that its sensors registered the truck and the shuttle stopped to avoid the accident. Had the truck had the same sensing equipment that the shuttle had, the accident would have been avoided. On a road filled with self-driving vehicles, the accident wouldn't have occurred, implies the statement. But Wikipedia's epic robot struggles tell a different tale. If an automated shuttle bus can't handle a single erratic driver, could it manage a gridlock of driverless cars, each with their own rigid programming imperatives? Never mind what this programming would contain or how it would differ from the manufacturer to manufacturer. Historian Yuval Noah Harari has already flagged up the dilemmas inherent in the task using an old philosophical conundrum. And we talked about this one at length when this first came up. Should a driverless car kill its passenger if it means saving the five people on the sidewalk or in another vehicle? Right. And they had decided, I believe, in that whole ethical debate that the car was going to kill the people in the car. Nevertheless, not everyone is pessimistic about the future of AI. Tech honchos from Bill Gates to Mark Zuckerberg have pronounced themselves sanguine, and the Facebook founder has condemned Musk's doomsday scenario. But whether you believe that we are heading for a nightmare of brutal robotic enslavement or a heaven of commuting while you sleep, one thing is certain: our new robot friends will need to get along. So what do you think about that? The Wikibots are battling over commas. And those battles go on for a year, and they don't give up. Sorry, now what else is AI doing? Well, Google's AI researchers and NASA just discovered two new planets. Well, good. Maybe they're going to try to get us off this rock. Not you and me, but them. Researchers from Google, the University of Texas at Austin, and NASA have used an artificial intelligence algorithm to discover two new exoplanets dubbed Kepler-80g and Kepler-90i. Kepler-80g is now a sixth planet known to orbit the star Kepler-80, and the latter, on the other hand, turned out to be the eighth planet orbiting its star, marking the discovery of the first alien solar system with as many planets as our own. This ties Kepler-90 with our own solar system for having the most known planets, says Paul Hertz, the director of NASA's Astrophysics Division in Washington. Kepler-90i, 2,500 light-years away from Earth, is likely extremely hot and rocky with searing surfaces above 1,800 degrees Fahrenheit, so it's not going to be another Earth. Like Earth, it is the third planet from the Sun, Kepler-90, which is in the star constellation of Draco. Kepler-90 is not a place I'd like to go visit, says Andrew Vandenberg, but since the Kepler Observatory launched in 2009, the space telescope has looked at 150,000 stars to date and generated over 30,000 possible planetary signals by measuring the light from those stars. It is like a needle in a haystack, says Chris Shulue, a senior engineer at Google's AI and one of the researchers on the project. To address this issue, AI researchers from Google and the University of Texas at Austin trained a machine learning algorithm to identify planets using 15,000 signals generated by the Kepler Space Telescope. The algorithm eventually achieved a 96% success rate in identifying which signals reflected planets and which did not. And the researchers then directed the AI to search through the signals from 670 stars that were already known to have planets, including Kepler-90, the star that was previously known to have seven planets in orbit, but now they found more. Just as we explained, there are exciting discoveries lurking in our archived Kepler data, just waiting for the right tool or technology to unearth them. This finding shows that our data will be a treasure trove available to innovative researchers and investors who want to get off this rock for years to come. That's how I see it. All right, so more interestingly, there was another story about AI in space, and this one included Lockheed Martin, and that's why this one caught my attention as well. Lockheed Martin, quote-unquote, revolutionizes search for alien life with its new artificial intelligence. Ahead of yesterday's NASA press conference announcing that algorithms created by Google have already discovered a new planet that was previously missed in the Kepler data, Lockheed Martin stated that they are planning on applying their own artificial intelligence program to a similar goal, sifting through huge reams of data collected by telescopes, probes, space missions to find planets that could support alien life. AI can revolutionize how we use information from space, both in orbit and on deep space missions, including crewed missions to Mars and beyond. Lockheed Martin and NEC, which they were a manufacturer of networking and telephony equipment, are experts in space and space systems, and that is the right blend to explore how AI can improve space products for astronauts and people on the ground, said Lockheed Martin. Though it is meant for intelligence organizations, their most recent product named FIDO, which is Foraging and Information Discovery for Open Source Intelligence, is being used to collect, collate, sift, analyze, and share vast amounts of information with the intelligence community. And though meant for intelligence organizations, the idea behind FIDO is the same when applied to space. Humans need help sorting through huge amounts of data, and AI is incredibly good at this tedious task of scanning and analyzing for potentially interesting data points. So did they just say there was a product called FIDO, Foraging and Information Discovery for Open Source Intelligence, that is used for the intelligence community to collect, collate, sift, analyze, and share vast amount of information for what, spying agencies? That's what it sounds like. According to Lockheed, AI offers the technology to change the human role from in-the-loop controller to on-the-loop thinker, who can focus on more effective, reflective assessments of problems and strategies, guiding rather than being buried in the execution of the detail. Right, just step back, let the machine do all the work. According to Lockheed, AI offers the technology to change the human role. And considering that NASA is still sorting through the old data provided by the Kepler mission and that Google's algorithm is finding planets that were missed by human researchers, Lockheed's plan to apply AI to upcoming space missions like the exploration of Mars could mean the difference between discovering evidence of extraterrestrial life and missing the sign in a stack and stack of data. So there you have it, guys. They are planning on getting off this rock. AI is getting smarter. It's being pointed to space. They're going to have dueling AIs looking for new planets to move their civilization or the ones who care for them. Well, new AI can write and rewrite its own code to increase its intelligence. This is out of futurism.com. A company has developed a type of technology that allows a machine to effectively learn from fewer examples and refine its knowledge as further examples are provided. This technology could be applied to everything from teaching a smartphone to recognize a user's preferences to helping autonomous driving systems quickly identify obstacles. Yeah, that's all it could be used for. And this old adage that practice makes perfect applies to machine as well. And as many of today's AI devices rely on repetition to learn, deep learning algorithms are designed to allow AI to glean knowledge from data sets and then apply what they have learned from concrete situations. For example, an AI system is fed data about how the sky is blue, which allows it to recognize the sky in a series of images, right? Just keep feeding it lots and lots of data. So what is going to happen? They've been talking about quantum computing and artificial intelligence. Well, there is now a startup that uses quantum computing to boost machine learning. If it fulfills its promise, quantum machine learning could transform AI into the big, scary monster we have thought maybe in the future. A company in California just proved that an exotic and a potentially game-changing kind of computer can be used to perform a common form of machine learning. The feat raises the hope that quantum computers, which exploit the logic-defying principles of quantum physics to perform certain types of calculations at ridiculous speeds, could have a big impact on the hottest area of the tech industry, and that would be artificial intelligence. Researchers at Regretti Computing, a company based in Berkeley, California, used one of its prototype quantum chips, a superconducting device housed within an elaborate silicon cluster. And the clustering is a machine learning technique that is organized data into smaller groups. And they said they made a new quantum computer which can handle 19 quantum bits or qubits available through its cloud computing platform. All right, guys, make sure you have an awesome Tuesday.